Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today's guest, Luke Henry, has lived the full family business experience, from writing support docs in high school to leading his family's tech company through a major acquisition. Luke is now VP of Grocery at Quilt Software, where he oversees the cloud-based POS system he helped develop at IT Retail, a company started by his father and a grocer friend in a California basement. At one point, the entire family was involved, parents, siblings, and even his mom in QA. From overcoming early challenges to building a platform that disrupted the SMB grocery space, Luke's journey is packed with lessons in legacy, leadership, and letting go. Luke, welcome to Growing Up B2B. So great to have you here today.
Cool. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for inviting me. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, let's start at the beginning. How did IT Retail come to be, and what made the partnership between your dad and his co-founder work?
Yeah, IT Retail came to be in around 1993, 1994. There was a grocer named Martin Goodwin, who was a third generation grocer. His father was running the grocery store, and Martin kind of, I like to liken him to Steve Jobs. He was working for his family business, but really had a big vision and saw Microsoft as the platform of the future, and realized in retail there was a Microsoft point of sale solution for clothing stores and stuff and the likes, but nothing for grocery that kind of leveraged the platform of Microsoft. So the database, I guess it was the Access database at that time, and just basically just believed in the vision and the future of Microsoft and said, hey, grocers need to be on the Microsoft platform. At that time, data, like, you weren't really able to look back through historical data beyond 12 months. Like, it was really slow. Reporting was terrible. There were so many issues that operators just struggled with kind of the limitations of technology at the time. So anyways, yeah, Martin Goodwin hired Microsoft to build a framework of what a point of sale solution would look like. But really, at the end of the day, my father, who was a consultant, a software development consultant, was brought in to help complete the product and then help take it to market. And so he was added as a co-founder. And from there, they finished the product and then tried to bring it to market.
So where did you enter the picture in all of that, Luke? It was probably not too long after. Was it not too long after that? When did you?
Yeah, so I think early days, I was a kid.
Yeah.
And my dad tells me stories of storage of mortgaging the house and stuff like that and trying to keep the business afloat. He spent most of his time in Mexico trying to scale the business. And as a kid, I just grew up around it, not really seeing my dad that much. He was working hard at the business, flying all over, trying to grow it and trying to keep it alive. I came in high school. I was doing kind of one of the things in running a software business is it really sucks, or it's really frustrating to create knowledge base articles. People like I think anyone that runs a company knows how valuable a knowledge base article is and it shares information, but to get your employees to do knowledge base articles is so challenging. And how it empowers employees, how it empowers customers, so that it just removes so many unnecessary conversations. And so I was brought in to help with knowledge-based articles. And so that was my first foray into the business.
How old were you?
I was probably around 15, 16 years old. Yeah.
Wow.
I was a paper boy. And then after I was a paper boy, I worked in kind of this knowledge-based article creation
part
of the business.
Yeah, so that's not the normal progression from paperboy to knowledge-based technology pieces for kind of a probably, I'd say at the time, a fairly cutting-edge enterprise, right? And that
Yeah.
was, I know
Yeah.
exactly what you're talking about. We've done some work in that space, and yeah, it was still very Wild West back then, the whole retail space as it related to technology and the work that you were doing. That was an interesting time for sure. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, like specifically, I guess what I was working on was there was these tool tips I think would have been recently invented. And with the tool tips, you're able to click like the help button and then cover over any part of the application. And then it would describe what is happening there. So, like in grocery, there's like unique special pricing methods. So there's maybe a unit price or buy three, get one free. There's all sorts of kind of unique discounts. And so like how the software can do it, but then enabling a customer to do it themselves was what I was piecing together with those help docs.
So as a young person in your teen years, you obviously were exposed to the business, but were you something of a technologist too? Were you an avid technologist as well at that point, or what was your
Yeah. Okay. So that actually makes me think of like when I was maybe, I want to say like I was around 10 years old, and my dad and his business partner, I was friends with the son of my dad's business partner. He brought home around six different non-working computers. And so what we did was like, we're going to build one really good gaming computer out of all of these six computers. So we pulled all the pieces out, pulled out the RAM, pulled out the hard drives, tried to find the best processor with the best motherboard, and then just plugged as much RAM as we possibly could fit into that motherboard. Tried to find the best hard drive, plugged that in, and then we installed Tony Hawk Pro Skater. I remember it was the computer, like it was finally not choppy. We were finally able to play, and we played for maybe 1 hour, and then the computer completely fried. So that was my first experience, or not my first, but I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just plugging things in and hoping that it would work. But I was young at that time, and like I was motivated to play a game without it being choppy.
okay. But nonetheless, there was a little bit of a technology slant to making that happen. And it sounds like you made the equivalent of a Frankenstein of the gaming world, if you
Yeah,
will.
exactly.
That's
Exactly.
pretty funny. All right. So you're 15-ish years old. You're writing these documents. You start tinkering in the family business. At what point did you realize that this was not just kind of a side gig or something you did, but it was maybe starting to shape your future?
Yeah. So I guess like fast forwarding to college, I was not in the family business. I worked at Starbucks and then worked at California Pizza Kitchen as a busboy, server, and all sorts of areas of the business. And I was there for around 3 years. And that was my full time. I was in college and then I was working 30, 40 hours a week in the restaurant space. And I was making decent money for a college student, but I did not love it. And I liked it, but just, yeah, I think just challenging customers, the schedule, there was a lot, I guess, that I didn't like. And so as I was nearing the end of college, I started to talk to my dad and be like, hey, is there any place for me in the company? Or like, where would you see me? And so when I finished, I started in tech support. And so just lowest of the low, I would go on installs. I did 24/7 support. So basically that means you're on call rotation for a week. So for a week you have your cell phone on you and it can ring at any time of the day.
You're on no matter what.
And you're there no matter what, saying, hey, how's it going? That was tough. Yeah, I spent plenty of times underneath cash registers and grocery stores all over the US. And yeah, they're generally relatively dusty and filthy down there. But yeah, I don't know. I spent maybe 2, 3 years just working tech support.
At that point, the company had more or less taken off at that point, would you say? Was it pretty much
Yeah, so
starting
the
to get
company
traction?
had come back from Mexico. So Mexico was where we had our initial traction. We scaled. We had 150 store, 200 store chains in Mexico. Transitioned that to the US and through a reseller channel, was able to really scale out the business.
Nice.
As I was coming on at this point, yeah, we were maybe the acceleration had slowed down a little bit, and we had amassed a decent base of customers, both through resellers and then also selling the software direct to specific customers. But yeah, we had a good kind of good, yeah, good customer base at that time.
Cool. Okay. So those early years, you were moving around the countryside and helping people out, making sure their systems were running correctly or optimally. And then at some point, you had the idea to build a cloud-based version of the platform. And that ultimately led to, I think, the next phase of IT retail's growth. And that was a bit of a surge. Talk about that for a minute.
So I guess maybe I would just back up and just comment on one thing. But yeah, at the same time that I was doing tech support, I was dabbling in marketing, SEO, PPC, search engine optimization at that time. And so I had started to take ownership of the business, even the feeling of this is the family business. I'm going to help try to grow this thing. And I had that very early on. And so as I was dabbling with SEO and PPC and trying to grow the business and trying to move up the ranks of Google, we at one of the trade shows, we closed a large chain in Texas. And so as part of adding that customer to our customer portfolio, one of the things that they charged us with was to build a cloud-based point of sale solution.
Okay.
And at the time, I was charged to run a camp or run a competition. And so we didn't have the resources in-house from a development standpoint to build this out. And so I ran a competition. We went to a bunch of different development houses, went to India, went to Russia, went to Ukraine, went all over the world looking for the right development house to build this cloud-based solution. And yeah, and we went to them and we would say, "Hey, this is what our application looks like. Can you build us a prototype? Communicate with us, ask us any questions you want. And at the end of this, we'll evaluate the prototype and then we may award you the job." And so a free development competition. I don't know if you could actually pull that off nowadays anymore, but anyways, at the time, we found a really good team that to help build it. And so kind of I helped manage that project to start. So basically what the goal was just to say, "Hey, we have the software that's been around for 15, 20 years, and we're going to try to make it cloud-based because we believe in cloud as the future." But as it evolved and as we scaled it out, or as it came to fruition, the first testing ground was a small store. And so we went into a small store, a small fish market in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where I was living at the time, called New Deal Fish Market. And we just said, "Hey, we have this system. Would you want to try it out in your store and see if it works for you?" And so that was how it started, was just, "Hey, you have a small store, let's try it out here." I'd say what happened was at the same time that we were starting to go out and try to meet these small grocery stores. And basically what we were doing at the time was I was walking around Boston, knocking on doors, just saying, "Hey, we built this cloud-based solution. Would this be helpful for your store? What are you using today?" And just talking to owners and saying, "Hey, how's it going for you? What can we do to help you? What would make it so that this system in your store would help you?" And so just talking with owners and just trying to figure out, "Hey, where do we fit in this market?" Some of the early conversations that are like, "We don't really like the cloud because we couldn't dump water on the server if the IRS comes." And so there was those conversations. And so maybe that wasn't the right customer for us. But there was other conversations where, "Yeah, it could be helpful, but it seems like you guys are still too early. Come back when you're a little bit more mature." And with a number of those customers, we have them today. But yeah, that's how it started, just going around knocking on doors, trying to find customers. Okay, so what I was trying to piece together was at the same time, because of the SEO and PPC work, we started to get leads coming in, but these leads weren't the traditional leads that we had. We had built the business off of with independent grocers and then small regional chains. And so our customer base, generally it's like a 7-lane, 10-lane grocery store. Maybe it has three, four, five locations, up to $1 billion revenue operations, publicly traded companies. And so that was our target market historically. And with this cloud-based solution and the marketing leads coming in, we realized, "Hey, there's this whole other part of the market that is completely underserved. There's these convenience store-like grocers. They have or ethnic markets, butcher markets, fish markets, Hispanic markets. There's all these different types of small grocers that don't really have the money to pay $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 for a single register at a store." And so we realized quite clearly, "Hey, there's something wrong with both our business model for these people, but then also maybe the cloud technology, because it can remove so much hardware from the store, we bring the cost down and offer them a competitive solution. So that's that was the impetus, like that was where we started to see the opportunity.
So what did it take to like really gain traction for the cloud-based model? Like when did it start to take off?
Yeah, so we did New Deal Fish Market, and then I would say that whole year we just spent going around knocking on doors, adding one customer after the next customer, saying, okay, this next customer onboarding is going to be smoother. This next customer, we're going to get better here. And probably at least 1 year of just like grinding it out. I'd say like maybe at the end of that year, we had 10 customers. Next year, we had around 30 customers.
Wow.
And then the next year of after that, I think we scaled up rapidly. We were close to 200 customers, where we brought in a really good salesperson who was able to help us really scale up.
Wow. So at that point, so you were involved in the business, your dad and then his partner. Was your sister and mom involved at that point yet, as it was starting, as the cloud-based model was starting to take off?
Yeah. So let me think. So it depends on the time frame, but yeah, like specifically when we were building it in 2016, I was there running the cloud-based product. My sister actually was in Boston too with me, and she was helping with business development, helping add customers, and then helping onboard customers. My mom was on the other side of the business doing QA for the legacy product.
So that's rare to see the whole family's all in on the business. Usually you see maybe a parent and a child or sometimes
Yeah.
husband, but usually you don't see the whole family all in. How did that dynamic work? Talk about that. So you're in business, you each have roles, and it sounds like your roles were fairly defined, or maybe they weren't, but it sounds like they were. How did you manage to balance working in the business and then pulling away and being a family? Like, how did that look?
Yeah, that didn't really happen. Like the two were very intermingled. Like
Okay.
every family dinner, there would be a conversation around an employee or a
Okay.
problem or celebrating a success. But the two were very intermingled.
Okay.
Even, yeah, like I mentioned that, but even my brother, when he graduated from college, I handed the product off to him. And so even today, he still manages the product, the actual engineers. And
Oh,
so
okay.
he was an engineer for me for a period of time, and then I handed off, and he now runs the product today. My other sister, she came into the business too, and she was doing onboarding for the cloud-based product for a few years. And anyways, like at a time, I have three other siblings. All four of us were in, my mom and my dad were in, and
Oh my gosh.
we would have family meetings every Monday where we'd all
Oh
get on the phone. We would talk and just talk, give an update about what's going on and what kind of the goals were for the week. But yeah, it was definitely a family business.
and did that work for your family? That sounds like it was very fluid, where it was not uncommon to just launch into a discussion about the business around a gathering where you all happen to be gathering maybe for a family gathering. Did that work for you in that setting? Was that a good thing, or? Looking back, did you wish, hey, I wish there were some boundaries?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough to say. I think it was hard for our spouses, probably. The spouses would be excluded from those conversations or didn't really understand what was going on and weren't able to really enter into those conversations. Yeah, I think during the scaling time, like this is just all I thought about. Like it was basically night and day, 24/7. All I was thinking about was business, and all I really wanted to talk about was business. I didn't really want to talk about how I felt or anything else. I was just like, let's grow. What are the problems? How can we overcome them? How can we grow? How can we make this thing fly? And so I would say like I was just consumed with that at that time. But yeah, as far as like the family, I think we as a family, we didn't really venture into, I'd say like more nowadays, like we're definitely not like that anymore. But like at that time when all the whole family was in there, just like emotions didn't really come in. Like there wasn't really a space for them. Whether that was good or bad, I don't know. not that great, but there wasn't really that much of a space for, okay, like this is actually really hard, or this is not quite working, or this is. And so I'd say, like, probably our ability to have honest and open and challenging conversations was not that great amongst the family, and we just avoided them to keep the peace. And the peace was great, but at the same time, it's like, what are you going to compromise? What's going to give? Is it what you believe, or is it the peace? And kind of, I think what we prioritized was the peace at that time.
And certainly nothing wrong with that because family is important too. Business is important, but so is family. When the other point you made, which I think probably was, I just wanted to dwell on for another moment, was it seemed like each family member fell into their role in the company, lived in their lane. And I'm wondering if that particular dynamic helped to, if there was a unilateral respect for, hey, okay, this is your role, Luke, and your sister plays this role, and your brother plays this role, and everybody was kind of living in their lanes, and maybe with some degree of mutual respect for, okay, that's your role, you do that role, cool, I'm not gonna get in your lane. Did that resonate? Is that kind of how it looked? Because it sounded like everybody fell into their respective positions in the company based on their predominant strengths and how they could best serve the company.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really interesting insight. I haven't really thought about that. The two things that come to mind is I think everyone in my family is extremely capable. And so there wasn't like a weak member in the family where they're like, oh shoot, like this person needs to get out. They're not pulling their weight. Like everyone had the same sense of like ownership and pride and drive to make the company successful. Also, as well, had the capabilities to do within their specific roles. I'd say probably the other piece of it is like my dad was probably quite wise here in the roles that he placed people in. And I think probably did the right, like he was able to get the right sibling into the right role for them to be successful.
That's great. That's great. At some point along comes Quilt, who now ended up acquiring IT Retail. Now, initially, it sounded like Quilt maybe saw IT Retail as something of a threat or as garnering share. That how did that process evolve into from, hey, they're a threat to partnership to eventually acquisition? How did that come to be?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we were really the only player in the SMB grocery point of sale space for a good 5 years. All the legacy players, Dumac, ECRS, NCR, they were all playing upstream with the larger independent grocers. And there was this segment of really small grocers that have grocery needs that couldn't be serviced by a Square, Clover, etc., by these horizontal point of sale players. And so we had this really good niche of that we had built. What happened was Quilt acquired a reseller of CRE, which is Cash Register Express, which was probably the best software, second to ours, but the best software for SMB grocery that could be offered at the right price. So they purchased the number one reseller of this. And so we were competing against them in most of the deals. And so we were competing. Sometimes they would win, sometimes we would win. But anyways, both really good companies. And so the previous owner of that reseller reached out to me and just said, "Hey, I got acquired." I had known him previous or I had met him previously, but he reached out. He said, "Hey, I've been acquired. You should at least talk to these guys. The deals, they're reasonable guys. You should just take a call." And so that's what I did. So I, anyways, took a call, flew out to Charlotte, met them in person. It was 2021, so still definitely like in the middle of COVID, but yeah.
And was your dad still involved in the business at that point?
Yeah, so at that time, my dad was involved in the business. I was running the day-to-day operations. He had moved to Germany, and so he was doing some mission work in Germany with the refugees at that time. And so I was running the day-to-day operations of the business. And so I told him, I was like, "Hey, I'm thinking about flying out to Charlotte to meet these guys." And he's, "Don't do it. They're going to trick you into it. They're going to trick you into selling the company." I was like, "I don't know. Like, I still feel like I should do it." So I got my plane ticket. He got a plane ticket. Then he canceled his plane ticket. I still went. I was like, "I'm just going to just check it out and see what it is." But anyways, yeah, that's how it started.
Oh, wow.
But
So
as, so how the deal went, like basically they came in, they made an offer. And then there was another, I had another friend or relationship with another guy who was a venture-backed company. And so I was talking, so we had private equity on one side and venture on the other side, and both of them were interested in the future and the potential of the cloud-based solution. And so both were making offers at the time. And so we had them go back and forth a few times, sharpen pencils. And it was a hard decision to try to, it's okay, what are we going to shoot for the moon? Are we going to go to private equity? And what does this look like? And what does our future look like? But at the end of the day, at the end of the day, we were able to get to some sort of agreement.
And were all the family members still involved at that point? Was everybody still on board with the company up to that point?
So my two sisters had left
Okay.
at this time. They had gotten married and started to have kids, and I think had once they got once I think with one kid they were able to still work, but once they had two kids, that was the max. Working and
Okay.
having kids, they just prioritized raising their kids over working, which is reasonable. And so
But
yeah, at
put
that
you.
time it was just my brother, myself, and my dad,
Okay.
really.
The what would you say was the hardest part of the whole acquisition process now that you look back? Maybe not just strategically, but also emotionally. What was that? You look back on it. What was the some of the real challenging moments in that whole journey?
Yeah, you just don't know what the future holds, right? And you're trying to figure out, you're trying to hold a crystal ball and trying to be clear and trying to think clear. And basically, you can't think clear because your emotions are involved. And like, I remember, my dad and I definitely had some serious fights during this time because part of the acquisition was that I needed to stay on. I was like, well, I have to stay on. That's not exactly what, that's not. Where I use the word selling me to slavery, which is probably maybe that was too strong in my negotiations, but I was like, hey, like I'm staying on and it's my job to grow this thing after acquisition. Like I'm okay with that, but at the same time, like the deal needs to be structured in a way if I'm going to stay on and commit to 5 years, like we have to make sure like that structure is right. And so that negotiation was really hard. I remember at the closing call, just being like relieved as, oh man, it's done finally. It's a 6 month, 4 to 6 month process, like of sending tons of data, like whether renegotiations, all sorts of things. But yeah, I remember being greatly relieved. But yeah, probably the hardest part was just the hard conversations that needed to happen. And I guess maybe the lack of sometimes there had to be a few days or a few weeks, not just a few days of silence where it was like, okay, I'm not moving on this one. We're gonna need to come to an agreement here. But yeah, anyway, we were able, yeah, I think in general, I think everyone's happy. The original founder as well. All of the family members involved were, I think, pleased with the outcome.
Excellent, excellent. Looking back, would you do it again? Would you do it all again if you look?
Do the acquisition again? I think it made a lot of sense. It's hard. There's definitely been times when it's been hard. I think, in general, where I stand right now is it made a lot of sense for everyone involved. Like my dad can retire. His other co-founder doesn't have to worry anymore about his money being tied up in this company. There was an, and then his family was also involved, and they got paid out and they're free from the equity that they had in the business. And they had it in the business for 20, 25 years. Like they put money in and didn't see a return for a long time. And so I don't think we had the financial, like we were not financially brilliant enough to come up with a way to pay them out within those 25 years. And so I don't know at what point like we would have been able to give them a good return on their investment. And I feel happy that we're able to provide a return. But yeah, like it was challenging.
So what would you tell another family-owned founder or family-governed business who's being approached for acquisition? How much, because we all get approached, and what advice might you give them when that call comes in that, hey, we're interested in your business? What might you tell them?
I don't know. I think every situation is going to be different. What might I tell them? I would.
You explored it, right? You know, your
Yeah,
gut
I think.
inclination was don't do it. And you were like, I got to at least know. You were somewhat curious. So you
Yeah,
approached
so
them with
probably the
curiosity.
only reason I took that call was just because I had a contact that I knew at the company that had already been acquired, and he was advocating for them. That was the only reason I was interested. Yeah, because we had a lot of other people reach out, and it's the conversations often around EBITDA and around EBITDA multiples, and that's not how how we were running the business at the time was not that way. I would say, okay, there's a few things probably. The first thing I'd say is if you want to exit, you need to plan for taxes. So there's QSBS and you can look that up yourself, but like you it basically there's ways to minimize the tax burden from an exit, and just being aware of that versus just saying, hey, this person's offering me a lot of money, I should go for it. And if you're thinking about an exit, like tax preparation up to 5 years in advance does make a lot of sense. You want to have equity. You don't want to have just a you don't want it just to be an asset transaction. Yeah, you want to have equity in the business generally at an exit, not just a portion of a bonus or something like that. I'd say that's really important. And then, yeah, trying to figure out like what the right buyer is for your business is also important. The reason it made so much sense for us is because there was a ton of synergy. They were a reseller. They had built a marketing and sales engine and organization that was excellent. And just being able to now sell a different product that they own was like a no-brainer home run, where we were able to double, triple sales volume within the first 6 months. And so like finding a partner like where the synergy is strong is clear, where if it's just like a tack on or just like a roll up, it doesn't there's not as much strategic value, and thus your multiple is going to be way lower.
And they saw value in you too, I would say. You were be able to reach a market that, effectively that they were obviously they were making inroads there, but they
Yeah, they were
wanted.
reselling into that market where if they could own a product in that market, then they could own the market. And that was the opportunity that they saw.
So that was it was good for them, it was good for you, and it sounds like when all was said and done, it was good for the family and the other stakeholders. So, it all kind of worked out. So now, along the journey, you had mentioned this a moment of, I don't know if it's whether it be a little bit of burnout, a little bit a moment of pause where you were starting to think, gosh, I don't know if I want to do this forever. Take me back to that. What was going through your head at that point? What was going on?
I think that was during COVID. And I think during COVID, just lots of people had reflections on their life. What do I want to do with my life? And I struggled with, I think some of the customers that we had were like, I really liked and really appreciated, but other customers were quite frustrating and quite challenging and quite demanding. And I don't know. I don't want to say humanitarian, but it's just like I think at the end of the day, like I'd want to do a different, I'd want to do something else as well. Just staying and servicing. I do really love our customers. I do really appreciate our customers today and appreciate what they do for the communities that they serve and want to help them succeed and want to help them with technology. But it's hard because at the same time, there you get customers that are like, I can't believe you sold me this thing. This thing's garbage. And then there's the other person saying, I love your business. This is excellent. And it's the given, and maybe that's just the way it is, but like it's if I would have built this, I would have done this. And it's, yeah, like you have to understand that AI didn't exist yet. Like you can't just write something and it's gonna happen. You have to actually code this, and you have to hire a person to do that, and you have to pay them like $100,000 a year. And that's like we have limited constraints. Like we can't just do everything we think of. And so, anyways, yeah, like I understand a lot more now, but like I would say in general, I was like, I'd like to do something else. I like doing this, I like giving back to this group. At the same time, this is mine, but it's not fully mine. Like it wasn't something I started, and I'd like to start something, and I would like to say, hey, I did this myself. Like I did this in the family, but at the same time, like, when I was building the product and trying to scale it in 2016, like I was watching so much YouTube as far as startup founders, startup stories, like all the venture capitalists trying like just like devouring any startup stories I could find, like going through the hard times, getting inspired. And so I'd say like I definitely have an entrepreneurial bug where I'm like, I love building and I love creating and excited about that.
And respectfully, I think you got to give yourself a little more credit, Luke, because you did. And maybe you weren't the founding spark, but gosh, at 15 years old to start making an impact, I'd say you certainly were a major contributor in terms of where the company went to, as well as being very neck deep involved in the build of what would become the flagship platform for IT retail, the cloud-based solution. I would say you weren't far removed from.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So now you're part of Quilt, and I guess your brother as well, right? You said your brother's okay.
Just me and my brother now.
And you're leading the product that you oversaw the build of, which is now called, I guess it's called Run Grocery, right? Is that what it's called now?
No, it's called Market POS.
Market POS. Okay, Market POS. I'm
Without
sorry.
any.
So how is this, talk about how this is different than this chapter now in heading up that particular platform versus leading your own company. What's different? What can you speak to on that?
I think the w number one difference is when I was trying to grow, when we owned the company, the threats were existential and I would lose sleep. I would wake up with nightmares of the business losing to competitors. I remember one time, like we had a large chain, 50 stores, and we knew a competitor was in there trying to get the deal. And we had to come and represent why you should stay with us.
Those are fun.
And it's a significant, it's a significant deal.
Yeah.
I just remember just patent slaving over the PowerPoint, making sure that everything was good, and then going to the presentation. But the night before, just waking up again and again, just scared of, and just almost like dreaming the competitor CEO was in there doing a better presentation than me and winning them over. And I don't know, I just lived in this like fear of we're going to die. We need to fight and fight to survive. We're like now being part of Quilt, like we are just a big, massive run Navy ship. We know like we are not going to not hit our numbers. We are on track and like bar like any ma massive external macro pressures, like we're able to hit targets and just everything is very well run and very well oiled. And we're just able to, we have thousands of reports, thousands of dashboards that we can review. We have quarterly business meetings where we're poring over how do we have any other blockers? Do we need to pour any more cash into this? How do we allocate this excess in budget? And so, anyways, like I'd say, like we're just in a very different position today. We're like, I think we've built, like with Quilt, we've built a quite significant company.
Nice. Nice. So when you look back, it's safe to say you've got a remarkable family. Everybody very talented, very capable, very competent, highly intelligent, it would seem. But when you look back at your dad, and some of the imprint that he left on you, what might be something that was in your dad's style of leadership that you find yourself carrying forward today?
I would say probably the number one thing that like I'm carrying forward for my dad is his work ethic and his lack of fear to roll up his sleeves. I'd say that's how I like to lead today. I guess just back up on my dad, he always tells the story of he would work during the summers in college. He would work in this aluminum factory where he was basically a manual laborer molding aluminum in extreme heat and smoke and terrible environment. But he would work, I think, 80 hours, maybe 60 hours a week for the summer so
Oh my
that he could
God.
save up money so he didn't have to work at all during the school year.
Wow.
That was just his work ethic. He's always had an extreme drive to work very hard and is not afraid to roll up his sleeves and kind of his, I was talking actually to one of our old employees this week, and he was like, your dad's way was always to throw you into the fire and see if you survive. And I guess that's how I was raised. And I don't do that with people as much. 'Cause I realize like not everyone, like that's not really how that things work nowadays. You can't just throw someone into the fire and expect them to survive. Give them a little bit to learn. But yeah, sorry, to answer the question, I would say I think it's the roll up the sleeves. Like for me, like my way of solving a problem is to like go to the root of the data and be like, okay, like what is the problem here? And I want to look at every single line item to try to really understand like, okay, what are the customers saying, or what are the sales reps saying, or what is the support team saying, and like where is the problem and how do we target it? And I don't want to just I'll talk to people, but I also want to talk right to the customer. I don't want to just talk. I don't want to hear through someone else. I want to go right to the customer and I want to talk directly to them and to understand their problem. And yeah, I'd say probably with me, that's like the number one thing is I don't. Yeah, I'm not trying to sit in a high tower and grow cash. Like I want to solve real problems with real people.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So what's next for you, either in the next chapter for now you're with Quilt? What's next for you for Quilt or beyond even? What are you, when you look to the future, what do you see?
Yeah, I think when I look to the future, I'd love to start my next venture. I think right now, like there's a lot of work still to do at Quilt. I think the impact that we've had has been great, but I think there's still a lot more that we can do. I think with AI and the speed at which we can deliver new features to grocers is faster than ever before. And that's really exciting to be able to help these grocers out. I think at the same time, we've always competed with the large chains, and like giving these small grocers the tools to compete is, I think, is a noble and fun mission to tackle. So I'd say right now for the next few years, I'll be at Quilt, and then yeah, we'll see. But
Excellent.
yeah,
Excellent.
I'd love to start my own venture. Love to go do something. But yeah, as far as what that is, I'm still thinking.
You got some time, it sounds like, to think on it and in this particular chapter with Quilt. And something I wasn't thinking about was it seems like rear view right now, but during that COVID era, being a kind of a backstage to the grocery industry, that must have been quite an experience. I'll vividly never forget that day that I walked into a Costco and they were out of chicken. Like, how does Costco be out of chicken? And I looked down the chicken aisle and it was like bare, except for one like half open package that was like damaged. And there
Oh,
were people like sizing that up to maybe buy it. And
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
like, damn. So as I think about this, like you were in the backstage, like seeing who knows what with these grocers who were just going probably out of their minds on so many levels, let alone implementing technology during all of this, or maybe having to because of all this. So that must have been just quite a chapter for the industry and especially all those that support that retail grocer space. Quite a time.
Yeah, I think the two things, or maybe the one immediate thing that we had to do in COVID was like make sure that stores could get online fast. And so just because people weren't going to grocery stores anymore, is like, how do we get these stores online? And we worked with a lot of e-commerce partners to help make that successful. And yeah, we had tons of good friends over those battle times where they were able to get stores on, just working all night, working all day to get stores online.
That's wild.
But yeah, we definitely experienced a lot of growth because of it, because people saw the opportunity, they saw how essential grocery stores were,
Yeah, for sure.
and they decided, hey, I'm gonna go create my own store. Yeah, we added a ton of grocery stores during that time.
I bet. I bet. Wild times and a wild ride. So,
Yeah.
last question. If somebody wanted to connect with you to learn more about your story or to learn more about Quilt, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way is probably just LinkedIn. So Luke R. Henry, I either work at IT Retail or Quilt Software. But yeah, Luke R. Henry. And I guess you could probably throw a link in the show notes, but yeah.
We absolutely will. We absolutely will. Luke, thank you so much for sharing the highs, the lows, everything in between, and doing so with tremendous candor from growing up in the business to leading to navigating the acquisition and now the next chapter with Quilt. So again, we've been speaking with Luke Henry, VP of Grocery at Quilt Software and former head of IT Retail, a true family-led success story in the grocery tech space for sure. And I'm Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Luke, thanks again for sharing your journey. This was awesome.
Yeah, no, I really loved it. Thanks,
All right,
Evan.
take care. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.dalianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DaliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed Dalia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.